It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It is hour number two of a numbers game right here at Visa, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Gil Alexander, the first sports betting network, by the way. On the way this hour, Chris Felica from ESPN's College Game Day, the Bear. From Daily Wager, of course, also, and the Stanford Stephen the Bear podcast coming up. Danny Burke and I'll talk some NFL draft props as well. But first, right here on Sirius XM channel 204, you can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia from somewhere under a cloud of smoke in Southern California. It's our buddy Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. Nice to talk to you.
You holding up okay? You staying safe?
Yeah, you know, it's not much different than betting baseball all day, staying inside, not talking to anybody.
Man, how much do you miss baseball right now?
A very, very large amount.
Yeah. Are you betting random global baseball? Tell the truth.
You know, I did twice, actually, a couple, like about a week ago. I saw there was some random Japanese preseason game going on, and I live bet it and lost. And then this weekend I saw one of my accounts was offering live betting on Nicaraguan baseball, and I bet it and lost. So, you know, that was just for action, but
yeah,
I couldn't really find any info on the stadiums in Nicaragua or the lineup. So it was, you know, just trying to pass the time, not really trying to make a ton of money.
Yeah. I may or may not be betting if the stock market goes up or down on a daily basis. I might be doing that too. I don't know. I'll tell you how much I miss baseball. I found myself watching, I don't know like how much random stuff, well, we'll get into actually how much random stuff you're watching during the pandemic, but I found myself watching the 1978 MLB Network shows all kinds of random games from the past. And there's something about old baseball games that is particularly interesting to me because it's such a time shift. Like, it's just a different world. And so they showed the 1978 Bucky Dent game where the Red Sox and the Yankees played game 163 to determine who would win the AL East. And it's the famous Bucky Dent game. Now, I thought the interesting thing about this, there's so many interesting things, but one of them is I thought Bucky Dent hit this 3-run shot to give the Yankees a 3-2 lead in the ninth. And that's how the game ended. It didn't happen like that at all. Like, he hit a 3-run homer in the seventh. The Yankees scored twice more. The Red Sox scored twice more. They ended up winning it 5-4. So it's interesting to go back and look at how you completely remember, not that I remember it from watching it. I was too young to recall it, but I never thought it went that way. And then the other things were like the difference in, you know, what a check swing. First of all, I don't even understand what a check swing is today. Right. But like, you could swing it almost all the way around. They're like, yeah, I don't know if that was a check swing or not. So there's so many interesting things. I don't know if you were watching random baseball games from the past.
Yeah, I watched a little bit. I think I might have told you I saw one of the late 90s All-Star games where Randy Johnson was pitching, and he was throwing, you know, something like 94, 96 miles an hour, and that was considered elite velocity. Just thought it was interesting, you know. You're watching Randy Johnson and listening to the announcers, and they're talking about how hard he's throwing. And you're thinking 94, 96. Everybody throws 94, 96 now, don't they?
Yeah, jeez. Yeah, and it's almost considered like, oh wow, he dropped a couple miles per hour if he's at 94. Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, it is interesting to watch, notice the differences in the games, and it does make me sad because there's no baseball now. We're being robbed of watching the best players. You know, guys all throwing 95 and able to hit line drives, you know, and home runs, and not that guys before weren't great, but we're just missing the peak of baseball right now. And it's sad.
What do you think you miss the most? Is it, if you could pinpoint one thing, I mean, maybe it's an unfair question, but I would imagine for you, the ability to see the Dodgers in all their glory, like just as stacked as they would be. Is that top of the list?
Yeah, that's obviously one of the things I miss. I mean, personally, the thing I miss the most is knowing, you know, and I'm on the West Coast, so I'm using times earlier in the day, but I miss knowing that every day between 4 and 5 o'clock, I have the chance to make, you know, $10,000 or more betting.
Gil Alexander and Jason betting. Weingarten here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jason. Go ahead.
I was saying I miss the part where every day I have a chance to make $10,000 between 4 and 5 o'clock betting baseball props, and it's less exciting when you don't have, you know, a lotto ticket like that every day.
Yes, that it would certainly be. You know, listen, so I'll throw this out to you, and I know there's no way to really know it. The world will determine it. The virus will determine the answer to this question. But just for giggles here, because I would so love a truncated season, and we'll get into some of that in a minute, because I want to sort of say this once a week about my desire for a truncated baseball season. But if I said to you right now, all right, Jason, I'm giving you a multi-tiered prop, one of which is shortened season that begins, you know, during when an actual baseball season would happen. A season that is delayed that goes from, say, I don't know, September to the end of the calendar year, or no baseball at all. What's the favorite there, in your opinion?
I think today, no baseball season, unfortunately, would have to be the favorite. I'm holding out hope that we're going to get some sort of shortened season and they're going to play potentially through December in warm weather locations. But I just don't know how realistic a lot of those options are, because there's so much downside putting all those players together. If you miss one, you know, one person who's sick and they get 10 people sick, what do you shut the season down again? You know, and I know they have contingencies for everything, but I think the downside of starting the season too soon is too great right now. And it's just making me not optimistic that we're going to get a baseball season. If we're lucky, we might get Mexican baseball in a couple months. And if we're really lucky, we'll get a full winter baseball slate in the Dominican and Mexico and, you know, Puerto Rico, and maybe we'll get baseball back then, and then the lineups will be better because a whole lot of guys are going to be looking for it back. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't tell you. I know. I don't.
It's a lot of people are going to listen to that, and a lot of people are going to think that's doomsday. But I agree with you, Jason. And I really think if you have, you know, Dr. Fauci yesterday talking about 100,000 to 200,000 deaths in this country, the notion of baseball starting at any time soon, especially, like, and I talked about it earlier on the show, I'll talk about it later with Chris Felica, college sports, like, we should just forget about that. Like, it's one thing if these are millionaires who play professional sports and it's up to them if they want to play or not, but like college sports, there's no chance that's going to happen when it's supposed to happen. The reason that baseball to me though is the most interesting thing from a potential handicapping standpoint to talk about. I think it's more interesting than talking about football, basketball, or hockey right now is because, and I talked about this last week, the nature of a truncated baseball season from a handicapping standpoint is so much more interesting than that other stuff because it completely flips the league on its head. And I'm curious if you agree with this to some extent. I just wrote this whole piece about my four favorite season win totals. You came on the show, you talked about your favorite season win totals, and it was all based on a 162 game schedule with a trade deadline and all that belongs in a season, in a regular season, a typical season. But if you only played 85 games, like some of the stuff that you and I talked about was the Yankees get over the injuries, the Astros, the retribution against the Astros, right, gets minimized. But what about like the other way of looking at it? Teams on the bottom who could just play one and a half months, you know, above their heads, all of a sudden would be in a pennant race. It would make for some really interesting future plays. I think it would be a fascinating season, but, you know, we can only hope.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that really sucks is losing all the win totals and, you know, and you beat the market on those and those are all going to void. But, you know, if you have outstanding division or pennant futures, as far as I know, you know, for example, I bet the A's to win the AL West at like 3.5 to 1 or something. That still stands. You know, the Angels to win the World Series at 45 to 1, still a valid bet. And like you said, if you only play 85 games, the variance is going to be massive. And just take a look. I mean, I know it's not necessarily the most fun thing to do, but if you have a ton of time, take a look at the standings of any baseball season, 80 games into the season, and note what teams are where and where they finish 80 games later. You know,
totally.
You're going to have a lot of teams. You're going to have a lot of teams still fighting it out through 80 games. And that would actually make baseball more interesting for some people for betting, you know,
Yes.
It would be fun. And it would be, it gives us something to look forward to. I don't know how likely it is, but I would love an 80 game season. I'd take any baseball at this point, you know, like whatever works it'd be great to have something on TV.
No, but I mean, I think that point just needs to be driven home because I'm not sure it's made more. It's like the one sport that was, you know, boxing, horse racing, and baseball were huge a generation before us. This would be the type of thing. And again, let's put it in its proper context. We get it. It's not the most important thing in the world. But in the corner of the world that we inhabit, betting on a truncated baseball season would be so much better and so much more interesting than a longer 162 game schedule, especially if you have it. And I'm wondering if it wouldn't apply if football, it wouldn't be better if it was short. Basketball, maybe some people, I mean, we've had a 50 game schedule and a 66 game schedule in the last 20 plus years in basketball. So maybe that's preferred, but just from a statistical standpoint, and the variance in baseball, God, that would be an amazing thing. But you and I are on the same page. I don't think it's going to happen. Jason Weingarten is our guest at Spreadopedia is where you can follow him on Twitter. The other thing, and this is sort of a random thought, Jason, I wanted to know what you thought about this. And this is kind of like the contrarian thinking. I get a kick out of sports bettors. Every sports bettor out there who's so sad that they can't bet right now. This is another little element to this. And then I wonder in the next breath, I'm like, yeah, I wonder how much money they're actually saving though in the process, right? There's like two different thoughts at the same time. And then when all these sports finally do start at once and there's an onslaught of betting opportunities, people are going to get absolutely bludgeoned and wish they were watching Netflix the whole time. Like there's all these different things swirling in my mind. I'm not sure if you've given that any thought at all.
Yeah, I've thought about different scenarios about all stuff going to happen. You know, one of the things slightly unrelated to that, but one of the reasons I'm not optimistic about baseball being played at behind closed doors at any stadiums is I just don't get, like, for example, if the Dodgers play a home game with no fans, are people still going to show up and drink beer in the parking lot because baseball's going on? You know, how you're going to have to police everything. People are just going to want to be there, and it's going to be tough. And that's why I don't think we're getting an expedited opening of baseball in any sort of form. But I've noticed a lot of people betting on simulated games and push-up contests online. So I see people really getting desperate, and it makes me wonder, and I mentioned this yesterday on Twitter, but you know, everyone's worried about what's going to happen this next week or next 2 weeks. I'm really interested what happens when we get into May or even June, if we're still sort of in the same situation with no sports. I mean, people are going to be, you know, driven up the walls going crazy.
30,000. I would mention this yesterday on the show at Bookmaker on Madden simulations, John Madden, video games. Madden simulations, that football, they were handling. They had a 30K handle per game, 30,000.
They were doing second half betting on those games.
Second half betting. I also mentioned this a couple times last. So not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before that. So we're talking just Bookmaker, no poker, no Chris, just Bookmaker site itself. 250,000 in handle on just random sports across the world. And I think I was talking to Rufus at the time. And as he pointed out, it goes, and probably like at a $250 limit on everything. So the crap that people are willing to bet on, even when they know nothing about anything, yeah, I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but this drives it home more than it's ever been driven home before. It's amazing.
Definitely.
Amazing.
The other thing also, I mean, if you have a $250,000 handle, you got to remember what the book's holding that day, probably 10% or less, you know, so you're making 25,000 bucks, which is a lot, but it's not a lot.
Well, I give them credit for being creative, though, because, you know, the books that are doing that stuff, the NFL draft props that they can get killed on, they kind of are like quietly putting it on the back burner and offering all that stuff. Jason, you are among so many things. Oh, one more thing before I get to your documentary recommendations, because I know I'm fascinated by what you're watching. Politics, because you and I have talked about this before. You and I have talked about it apolitically on the show. We just want to make money in the politics markets. Before it was on primaries. Now, as we look to the general election, and again, let's preface this by saying you and I talk about it just in a vacuum. We don't care about the politics. We're just trying to make money. Here we are. Donald Trump is doing a press conference daily during this global pandemic. In the meantime, the presumptive Democratic nominee, Joe Biden, is either absent or putting on really poor performances. I think it's universally agreed upon when he is out there. How are you viewing the general election right now? And should we be confident that Biden's going to be the nominee in the end for the Democrats?
You know, there's massive downside with Biden right now, which is that he can't go on TV and give a coherent speech, and it makes you question his mental capacity and, you know, what's really going on with him. Is this the guy who's really going to lead the country? I don't know. The problem is finding an alternative candidate at this stage is a very challenging. I mean, you have Hillary Clinton, who's not really an option, whose name and brand is pretty toxic still. You have Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, who's kind of been the hot sort of name going around, but I don't know how much I see him as a viable option. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to leave New York in a time of crisis either, but there really isn't another name that I could come up with off the top of my head that makes very much sense for the Democrats to run in place of Biden, unfortunately. But I just don't see how they can go forward with Biden. They need to find somebody else. They need to find somebody who can debate Trump, who can deliver a coherent speech, who can, you know, Biden's excuse, he can't do a town hall from his house or whatever because they don't know how technology works. I mean, come on, we need and expect more than that from the next president, whether, you know, whoever it is. But I've been betting the field against Biden for the last couple of weeks. It got up to 11-1 for the field for anybody to be the Democratic nominee but Biden. It's down to about 4-1 now. You know, I don't really like saying bet 4-1 when you could have got 11-1 a week ago. But I just don't see how Biden actually holds up and is the nominee. They have to be scrambling. They have to be considering alternatives. I just don't know who that alternative is, you know, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about it and poring over different scenarios, but I think Biden's got to go. And that's just, you know, you need somebody who can actually deliver a message and show leadership. And I don't see Biden as a guy who's showing any sort of leadership. And, you know, I'd say the same thing for Trump right now. He's severely impacting his chance of reelection every time he opens his mouth at this point.
It is stunning, and I just bring it up. Well, by the way, for the record, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, says he's not interested at all in being president. But it is just, I wanted to bring it up because with all of the uncertainty in the world, I mean, it is embodied in our presidential election this year. Two candidates who have a lot of negatives, obviously. Will the Democratic convention, who knows if that will happen? Who knows if the Republican convention will happen as scheduled and in what form? And on the Democratic side, as we've talked about in the primaries, who knows if anybody will have enough delegates to clinch the nomination by the time the convention rolls around, if it does. So it's all very fascinating and so much is up in the air. And again, Jason and I just trying to make money, apolitically speaking.
There's too much time and too much uncertainty for me to be confident that Biden's going to be the nominee.
Yeah, it's nuts. All right, our last 90 seconds here, Jason. Give me the Doc Ellis documentary you watched and then one other of your choice you'd like to recommend for folks.
Doc Ellis documentary on it's on a free streaming service called Tubi. I really like that one. I liked it because it's free. Good one. I really like on YouTube. There's a BBC documentary on the Battle of the Somme, World War One. I thought it was much better than 1917. Also the documentary on the 1980 New Mexico State prison riot, also available for free on YouTube, is very interesting, very informative. The prisoners took over the prison, took the guards hostage, killed all the informants. Very interesting stuff.
And Doc Ellis, you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, for those who are too young to know who he is, claims to have thrown a no-hitter on LSD. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's his claim to fame. He's a little more interesting than that, but that's his big claim to fame, is he pitched a no-hitter high on acid, supposedly. I don't know if you could do that, but he says he did.
He says he did. What's the streaming service? Tubi? T-U-B-I?
Tubi. T-U-B-I. It's free. It's got a whole bunch of random stuff. Kung Fu movies, Rudy Ray Moore movies. It's you got to sift through it, but it's got a whole bunch of stuff to keep you from being totally bored.
Did you just say Rudy Ray Moore? There's some Dolomite movies on there? I'm in.
There's every Rudy Ray Moore movie on it. You can spend a week watching Rudy Ray Moore if you wanted.
Phenomenal. Jason, I appreciate it, man. Stay safe.
You too, Gil. Stay safe. I hope we'll be back talking about baseball sooner than later.
I hope so, too. Jason Weingarten. Coming back, some NFL draft props next on A Numbers Game at VSiN.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is A Numbers Game brought to you by the MGM app, the BetMGM app, that is. Gil Alexander in San Francisco. Danny Burke in studio at our mothership in Las Vegas. By the way, Jacob Roach in the producer's chair right now is working on a Joe Exotic imitation. Jacob, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but could you, for everybody, speak from now on in a Joe Exotic voice? Could you give us a sample, sir?
We're going to have to get Jacob up here, Gil. He's walking over. We're getting him on set. And all right, here he comes. He's going to give you the impersonation.
This is all I wanted to hear.
Hey, Gil,
this morning.
It's me, Joe. Real big fan of the show, Gil. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Jacob. Well,
not too shabby.
Well, he's got a future. This doesn't work out.
All
right,
Danny.
He has
worked at a zoo before, so he does have experience with animals. So.
Well, very qualified. There's a lot of other qualifications to be Joe Exotic, but we won't get into it right now. All right, Danny, lead me to a prop. What do you got?
All right, so you kind of hit it a little bit earlier with Michael Lombardi when you had him on, and I think this one's intriguing, and I was talking with Karina, who works downstairs, does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, and she made a good point here, and it's the third quarterback picked prop, and this is via William Hill, and Herbert, no surprise, the favorite, -260 to be the third quarterback picked in the draft. Jordan Love at 2-1. Then you get Tua at 7-1. And we were talking about it. I mean, are you kind of sold that Tua at 7-1 could be a good value play here? I mean, what's your assessment when it comes to those top three quarterbacks? Are you as high on Jordan Love as some of the other executives potentially are? Or do you think Tua is going to be the second quarterback drafted? No doubt about it.
I do think this is priced correctly. I mean, I know that I actually asked Lombardi the question where I was sort of leading him to the fact that I think Tua could be tremendously overrated. We don't know about his injuries. We don't know how good he is when he's surrounded by Alabama type talent. So I sort of led him down that path. And then I don't know if he riffed off that and was like, hey, I think that Justin Herbert could be picked before Tua. I don't know, and obviously Joe Burrow going number one. I don't know that I agree with that, even though I sort of gave the preamble to the question. I was surprised to hear him say that a little bit, so I think it's priced properly. As far as Jordan Love's concerned, I mean, Jordan Love has a rocket arm, but he falls under the category to me completely of NFL GMs go nuts for quarterbacks, right? They go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs?
That's right.
Nuts for quarterbacks on draft day. And to some extent that is understandable, right? Because it's a quarterback league. And as Chris Collinsworth, famously said the most important position in the NFL is quarterback. The second most important position is backup quarterback. And it makes sense. But to me, Justin Herbert's the third quarterback picked. You disagree with that?
No, not necessarily. I could see why there would be an argument for some decent value with Tua at 7-1, but I do agree when it comes down to it. I don't really foresee him, you know, getting to that third quarterback picked unless for some reason there's a lot of, you know, love for Justin Herbert and something kind of crazy happens. I mean, I know you've hit this too, but you and Matt Eumanns, I believe, have kind of hit on this. With the Redskins, do you think there's a potential they shift to going with the quarterback, or are you of the notion that, you know, 100% they're all in on Chase Young?
Yeah, I mentioned this with Matt and with Brent last week. I think the Redskins are picking Chase Young at number two. And I know there's a lot of, first of all, you know, they call this lying season, right? Where teams are posturing and, you know, is there a package? You know, I stated this with Michael Lombardi. Was there a package that could woo the Bengals into trading the number one pick? Yeah, there's probably a package out there somewhere that if somebody went just absolutely nuts and gave, you know, the entire firm to the Bengals, they might bite. I think the same applies with the Redskins at number two. Chase Young is a local kid who went to DeMatha High School. And as I pointed out last week, DeMatha is a school that most people know for being a great high school basketball juggernaut nationally. The late, great Morgan Wooten was the head coach there for many years before his passing a few months back. But Chase Young played football there in Hyattsville, Maryland. He's a local kid. Ron Rivera loves multidimensional defensive players. I just cannot imagine the Redskins not taking Chase Young there. As sexy as all this talk is, teams to trade up. I mean, is there a package? Is there a scenario where they would move out, much like with the Bengals? Sure. There isn't a perfect world. I just don't think the Redskins do that. All right. I really don't.
Okay, Gil, we got about 30 seconds before we got to hit a break, so I'll get you with this tease here for when we come back. We'll go with the Alabama and LSU players drafted in the first round. It's 5.5 for both, -110 each way over under for Alabama. The over +165 for LSU, the under -$2. And then we'll talk about who we think will have more first rounders between those teams and those odds. So we'll hit that when we return.
I got thoughts.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander, SiriusXM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Boobo Sling, Game Plus. I'm live from San Francisco. Danny Burke in studio in Las Vegas. Danny, I am strongly considering giving a entire script to Jacob and have him introduce every segment as Joe Exotic from here on out.
Absolutely. We'll have to do it. He's going to rehearse even more so. And then we'll get him to be a little bit more diverse and hit some of the other characters. But I think he's ready for the job.
Do a little Carol Baskin for us later on the show. All right. Good. All right. NFL draft prop. Now on this show, I don't know if you know this, Danny, over the last 2 years, 14-1-1 in NFL draft props in our official picks. It's kind of a little cottage industry for us. So none of these are official, but I'm just curious, just throw them at me because I was not in Vegas because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I had left for San Francisco before they came out this year. So this is a weird year in general. So I didn't get to bet these, and I don't talk about hypotheticals on the show. I just tell you what I bet because I'm actually betting. I'm not betting in theory what I actually bet and what I didn't. So in many of these cases, I didn't bet these because I never got a chance to, but I'm curious some of the ones you'll throw out here. So please be my guest, sir. What do you got?
All righty, let's get right into it. Alabama and LSU draft props. These are via BetMGM. Now, these odds have shifted a tad bit, and we'll start with Alabama. Number of Alabama players drafted in the first round. The number's at 5.5, Gil. When we last talked about it, the over was -1.25, under was +105. Now it's -110 each way. So where do you lean on number of Alabama players drafted in the first round?
I'm a little surprised by that. So it's only -110 to the over. I think there could be a half dozen guys. I think there could be six guys drafted from the Crimson Tide in the first half. And I don't think it's that big of a stretch either. Like, I think there's a scenario where six guys could be drafted in the first 20 picks. That's how much I think. So, and just to list them, right? Mm-hmm. Tua, the two wideouts, Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs. No particular order on these, by the way. Tua obviously will go first, though. But Ruggs and Jeudy. Then there's Jedrick Wills right. on the offensive line, Diggs, the corner, and then, of course, McKinney, the safety. Mm-hmm. Like, who doesn't get drafted in the first round from that group?
No, I agree. I think the over is the move there just based on all those guys you listed right there. I mean, who do you think is going to make you sweat it out potentially?
One of the guys in the secondary.
Probably either McKinney, Diggs or McKinney could be the guy that drops pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be the funky one, I guess. That would probably be the guy. McKinney would be the one, but I don't know. I think I'm not that terrified of that not going. I mean, six from one team is ridiculous in any team in any season. But this is a team that could have that, and I'm not so sure it's going to be that tight at the end.
Well, and especially now that the numbers move down, like you said, it's -110 each way.
Yeah. It's just such a weird draft. I mean, I guess that's I'll talk to Felica about this too, and to talk to Lombardi about it. I really do think like they can't have the same kind of due diligence or the same contact with these guys. So who knows? Like in many of these cases, maybe this is good that I'm, maybe this will prevent me from betting the draft as much this year because who knows really in the end what these teams are thinking. But for me, if you're telling me it's 5.5 and the over is -110. I think you have to bet the over there.
Sure. All right. Now, how about LSU, though? This one also had 5.5. The over is +165 for over 5.5 players to get drafted in the first round from LSU. The under -$2. Any value on one side or the other there?
I actually think I'd still bet the -$2 on the under. Because you tell me. You tell me who the sixth player is, right? So Burrow's first. I guess Chazon is in there. Patrick Queen, the linebacker. Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver. And then their corner, Fulton. So,
and then maybe Delpit, who's the safety, sixth? I guess.
Oh, Delpit is good. I don't know if you look at mocks, though. You don't see Delpit in mock drafts in the first round very often. Mm-hmm. The question is, how much do you want to rely on those mock drafts? I mean, those guys know their stuff. If it's Jeremiah or McShay or any of those guys. Delpit, I guess, is the guy that it hinges on. I'm going to say under, though. I agree with that move.
Okay. Well, then when you look at, if you're going with the under, instead of laying $2, would you almost go to the prop more first rounders, Alabama -170 instead of LSU +135? Wouldn't it just be worth to take Alabama -170 at that point?
Of all those that we've talked about, mm-hmm. I like Alabama over at -110. Okay. Let's put it that way. That's the one. If you told me I got to bet one thing there, that's what I would bet. But yeah, I mean, think about what we're talking about. So let's say Delpit doesn't get drafted in the first round. That's still 11 players from two teams. So that's more than a third of the first round from those two schools. Just amazing.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. Yeah.
All right.
Well, all right. Give me this. Serve up another.
Yeah. So, well, this one goes to the NFL, and I'm intrigued in this one because there is some good value on some players, and we got about a couple minutes left, Gil. So I'm curious your thoughts. It's NFL Comeback Player of the Year. These odds via points bet at the top, Big Ben +275, J.J. Watt +525. Then you got Nick Foles 6-1, Cam Newton +625, A.J. Green 7-1, Stafford +750, Miles Garrett 12-1. Andy Dalton, C.J. Mosley, Deshaun Jackson, and Joe Flacco, all at 33-1. I know who I like, but who would you circle out on that list?
I'm just sort of giggling at Joe Flacco at the bottom there at 33-1. Did you and Jacob did this one? Is that why we're bringing this one up?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so this is interesting. You know, just from, I'll tell you, if it's, I don't know. I don't like the price on Big Ben, so I'm going to throw him out. J.J. Watt seems like an interesting one. Nick Foles is obviously a sexy pick that people like to talk about. But I'll tell you that the sort of easiest one via stats to imagine is A.J. Green. If A.J. Green plays a full season of football, that to me is sort of one. I don't like Myles Garrett. I don't consider that a comeback player of the year.
Right.
So A.J. Green to me would have a lot of interest. Obviously, I'd like to know exactly what his season's going to look like. What did you come up with?
Yeah, A.J. Green was probably my number two guy at 7-1, but I really like Matt Stafford at plus 750. If this Lions team can take any sort of a step forward and he can, you know, pad his stats like we've seen him do before, obviously it's just revolving around staying healthy. I think Stafford at plus 750 would be my best bet with A.J. Green following.
How many games did Stafford play last year, though?
It was less than five, right? Just a few?
Less than five? Yeah. Okay. Because comeback player of the year, there's a little bit of nebulous to it, right?
Right.
A little
you
bit of
have
vague.
Narrative.
Yeah. I'm going to go AJ Green, but I like your pick as well. I understand. We'll come back. Chris Felica, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day on the way. Going to give us a horse racing bad beat story right here on a numbers game at BC.
To a numbers game with Gil Alexander.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a man who not only enjoys his college football, but also usually his calendar year attends March Madness, attends the Masters. His life, like so many of ours, like all of us, has been affected, but his perhaps affected in a way that no one else's is in that respect. It's our good friend. And Chris Felica from ESPN's College Game Day, Daily Wager, and of course the Stanford Stephen the Bear podcast. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing okay. You're right. It seems a little bit weird right now. I should be getting ready for a Final Four weekend, and then onto the Masters. And obviously, that's not happening, and for the serious reasons. And hopefully, we can get through it and as quickly as we can, and scientists can do their thing and we can talk about the things we really like talking about. But yeah, it's definitely a very weird, surreal time right now. That's for sure.
God, is it, man? What's your day like? Are you, I mean, I guess at this time of year, you'd be talking about, I mean, you're headed to the Final Four, you're doing March Madness, but would you have already started your college football preparation? And are you doing that now?
What I have been doing now is just getting ready for the draft, because we the NFL is saying the draft is happening on April 23rd, and we will be televising the draft as far as I know, and in some manner. And so I'm getting ready, doing a little draft prep right now. It is the majority of my work. Also this afternoon at 2 o'clock on Twitter, we're going to have a little Daily Wager Twitter show. Myself, I believe Duck Azarian, Joe Fortenbaugh, and Anita Marks, I think, will be the four people on today. So that'll be on Twitter. And as soon as I get a link, I can shoot that out. But yeah, I'm starting to do a little bit of college football stuff. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I started doing some, like how we just like to look at like some turnover stuff and some close game stuff that might, you might be able to find a little bit of an edge and some teams win totals once they get posted. So I've done a little bit of the upcoming season prep, but not a ton. Mostly my work stuff right now is focused around the draft.
I just went over a prop with Danny Burke here in the previous segment. I am curious if you agree with this. First round, both LSU and Alabama players drafted set at 5.5. In the case of LSU, the under is juiced on the 5.5. I went under on LSU. I actually went over on Alabama. Do you agree with those?
Yeah, I do. I guess the bet would be does Diggs go in the first round, because then McKinney, Wills, Ruggs, Judy, and two are all going to go. And I would think the allure of Diggs and his speed and cover skills, I think at that point in the back end of the first round, he would go to make it six. And Terrell Lewis would probably be a long shot, I would think. But I would go over with Alabama. And it certainly seems like the bet with LSU is just Delpit moving to the first round. But I would go over the 5.5 with Bama and under the 5.5 with LSU.
Yeah, that's what I settled on. And so you and I talked a little bit about this off air. I talked about it earlier on the show. And it's just kind of everybody coming to this sort of at the same time. I know it's not just us in a vacuum. But do you get a sense, and I'm asking you just for sort of a spider sense here, or just a Malcolm Gladwell blink kind of thing. Do you get the sense that we're going to see college football when it's supposed to happen or when it typically happens? Because, again, this is one thing to talk about the NFL. Roger Goodell's not stopping for no virus, apparently. Damn the optics of it, right? And some will say that's a good thing. Some will say it's completely dissonant with what's going on. But college kids, Chris, I mean, we're not just talking about games, right? We're talking about student bodies. Like, could you even imagine that happening right now?
I can't. This is just my guess. I can't imagine it starting when it's supposed to start. I've even heard some things in the last couple of weeks. I've heard about ideas thrown out there of maybe you start the season a month or so later and you don't play non-conference games and you only play nine conference games or eight conference games. I've heard from people that maybe coaches that maybe they wouldn't even be comfortable having practices until there is a really concrete treatment or a vaccine in order. And certainly I don't think that's going to happen by the end of this calendar year. So it's the great unknown right now. But I heard you talking with Jason and about the possibility of no baseball, but I'm with you right now. I would lean towards there being some sort of delay at the very least in the start of the season. And maybe for no other reason, out of an abundance of caution, because you are dealing with a bunch of kids. You are dealing with potentially a bunch of college kids coming back to campus, and they can't put these kids really in a bubble. So we'll see. I know Kirk took a lot of grief for offering his opinion out there. And believe me, I've worked and known Kirk long enough to know that he's just not throwing something out there against the wall to try and get a reaction. He was asked for his opinion, and his opinion as a former player, a father now of current players, a son of a coach, someone who talks to a lot of people. My guess is he was just not throwing that out there to be reckless and get a reaction that he actually thinks that there is a lot of legs to the potential at least postponement or delay of the season.
Yeah, it's amazing the reactions you get. Chris, I was on this show 2 weeks ago while sports were being canceled in real time on the show. Like after I would talk about them being canceled, conference tournaments were getting canceled back to back to back. And I'd still get a guy on Twitter saying, oh, you're overreacting, Gil. Like I'm saying the sports are getting canceled on the show, dude. Like, are you kidding me? It's amazing. So yeah.
Could you imagine if like for whatever reason, like, they were playing Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games this weekend with like no one in the stadium. It just would be like the optics of that right now just would not be good. And it's like, look, we're all hoping for sports to come back, and we're all hoping that our families and friends stay safe. But I there'll be a time and place where we just need to be as patient and smart as we can.
Yeah, I guess was it the Elite Eight? Would that have been this past weekend, or would that have been this coming weekend?
That would have been this past weekend. That would have been Saturday and Sunday.
Weekend, yeah, so yeah. I thought about it on Saturday.
You and I right now could have been talking about potential Final Four stuff, but that's where we are. I keep thinking back about how you always used to ask me if you could always bet on one thing, like what would it be?
Yes.
Like college football or golf, and I would always say it's horse racing. And the crazy thing is that horse racing is kind of the last thing standing right now in terms of wagering for me. So the fact that I've had that has been a pretty welcome distraction / time occupier. Certainly on the weekends, and certainly the later part of the week when when Oaklawn and Gulfstream have been running. So it's a little funny that was my answer. And that's the one thing still going.
It is amazing. Like in some strange way that manifested. My brother's best friend was a showrunner for lots of science fiction shows in Hollywood. Very successful guy with Star Trek and other sci-fi shows. And one time I was sitting on a balcony at the Cosmopolitan years ago with him, and just randomly he looked down on the strip and he goes, "One day this will all be gone." Right? Like a very science, a sci-fi thing to say, because he thinks in those terms. And not that that's going to happen, this will pass, but just the notion that we got a glimpse of it here in the short term, it's just mind-boggling that some of this stuff is manifested. In our last couple minutes here, Chrissy ended the show yesterday with a horrible horse racing bad beat in story time. You were listening and you shared one with us. Would you like to share it with everybody right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to go back to May 2004, Hollywood Park. There was like a 3 or 4 day pick six carryover. I went Friday, Saturday, Sunday, didn't hit, and they raced again on Wednesday. There was about an $800,000, $900,000 carryover. And with the bets in the pool, there was roughly just under $4 million in the pool. And so I put together a $96 ticket, which in the scheme of pick six tickets is nothing. It's minuscule. So I'm like, I'll throw some money out. I don't have at the time a lot of money to be able to throw something like that. But I'll put $100 toward that with one single, one race with three, and four races with two. So my single is in the first leg. I hit the single, 6-1 shot gets home. I'm like, wow, all right. So I'm alive. Next race, beaten favorite, 5-1 shot wins. I had it. Third leg.
Wow.
5-1 shot hits. I have it. I'm like, all right, now this is interesting because now I'm now I got a leg with three, a leg with two. I've beaten favorites already. And I'm at the Bristol OTB. Watching, I didn't have TVG or anything at that time, HRTV, nothing really online to watch. So I'm with the old Bristol OTB watching it, and the regulars are all in there, and they know I'm there. They know the ticket that I have, and they're paying attention. Fourth leg, only winning favorite finally. It was like Chrissy said, like a bunch of favorites you didn't think could win. So finally, this race was the first race that I actually had the favorite on the ticket with one other horse, and the favorite winds up winning. So now I'm 4-4. And one of the guys said, "Hey, you can't hit a daily double the rest of the way? You got this. I'm like, oh, God.
Here we go.
So I got three horses with feature and two horses in the last race. So I get to the feature. I think it's a field of seven. The next to the second longest choice in the board wins at 11-1. And I have the horse on my ticket. And I'm going crazy. And my buddy Antonio, God rest his soul, who passed away last year, he's doing circles, running around the room, sprinting like he actually has a ticket, high-fiving everybody. So he's going nuts. And now I'm 5-5. And
20 seconds,
I got one
Chris.
Race left.
Yep.
It's a maiden race. There's an 8-5 entry who I don't have on the ticket. They finish up the track. I have the second choice. He has the lead at the stretch, fades. My other horse is 20-1, left at the gate. Makes a big run, fades, finishes off the board. I wound up getting 5 out of 6, $6,000 for it. And then the horse, Aaron Asher, who the 20-1 shot was, wins his next race. So I had the right horse. Bad beat, should have taken home about $3 million that day.
Thank you, Chris. Enjoy for VEASAN.